Hello, everyone. We're trying something new today. Where we're recording, the reason why you hear so much noise, we're trying something completely different. As I said, we were recording live at 4 State Comic Con today. I'll probably be giving to you guys a Destiny's review. As he's walking by is Captain Kyle from his YouTube channel. I'm going to turn the mic towards him and have him tell you a little bit about his YouTube channel, if he's willing to do so. And give a little bit of promotion about us and who you are and what you do.
Hi, everybody. I'm Captain Kyle. I'm a cosplayer, among other things. Author, actor, writer. Pretty much I do anything, you know, people give me money for, or and sometimes when they don't. My site is cosplayspotlight.com. And someone's making an announcement here, so I'm going to wait a second. Are you going to edit this later, or is this live?
This is, in essence, live. This is our live episode that we're trying something a little bit different for, see if how it reacts.
Okay, this is live, so I shouldn't say
You can say whatever you want. I don't care.
Yeah, if you go to cosplayspotlight.com, we have costume reviews. We have a talk show where we actually interview cosplayers as if they're the person they're dressed as. We have comedy skits. We have cosplay tips. We have celebrity interviews. All kinds of stuff.
You had the Walking Dead panel yesterday, didn't you?
I wasn't here yesterday. My camera girl was sick, so I couldn't actually come in for that.
Sorry to hear that. If you were, I heard various things. I was wondering how you felt your panel went. So,
very good without me there. It was amazing. It was incredible. I mean, it was like I was just present
somewhere
in
else.
Spirit. But actually, we'll be interviewing a couple of the people. Anne Mahoney from The Walking Dead will be interviewing here later on.
And they could find those interviews, where, sir?
At cosplayspotlight.com. Give us a little bit of time. It'll probably be until Thursday before we get Anne's interview up. Of course, we haven't even shot it yet, so this is what we call optimism. You know, if something happens,
so
I don't get it.
But either way, keep track to his site. There's going to be something new there, probably posted either, weekly, daily?
We post new stuff pretty much every Tuesday and Thursday, and sometimes on Friday.
So keep a track of his site. So we'll probably put a link in here. I think I got one of your cards. Now, hand me one of your cards. That way, I'll put a link in our description. And that way, it's easier for the folks at home listening could find you.
Absolutely. Or cosplayspotlight.com. It doesn't matter if you spell LIGHT or LITE. It'll both bring you to the same place. I'm smart that way.
Well, I do thank you for being on today.
Thank you, sir.
Hope you have fun.
And everybody out there, have fun and cosplay on.
Again, thank you, sir. And like I said, we're here. That was Captain Kyle. And again, you heard me say that these things happen on a live show. We're recording at 4 State Comic Con in Hagerstown, Maryland at the Hager Hall. And one of the things you probably heard me occasionally say on Twitter is that I picked up the Destiny 2 game today. I don't want to say today, but by the time you hear this, I probably would have completed it or with a level or two away from completing it. There's a lot of things I like about it, and there's still a lot of things I hate about it. One of the things that... Feel free to take a flyer. You're more welcome. They are free. So you'll be hearing us advertise. We're at the booth right now. So you'll hear us trying to promote the show and everything else. We'll try to get more people here to be on the show and interviews as we go. Like I said, one of the things I like about the show is that the maps are bigger. The fact that in order to go from one section of the map to another, like in the European Dead Zone, you don't have to go back to orbit and go back to a new location. There's a fast travel, so to speak, to that new location. When you go to your map, feel free to take a flyer or a card. It's up to you. They are free. We are recording live right now. So if you want, you can tell us what you dress. You can tell us what you're cosplaying on, who you are. We have a guest right now in the middle of our desk. Like I said, this is a live show today. We're trying something new.
Hello.
So, how are you?
Doing all right. Language is not an issue, so
okay,
you can
good.
Say what you want within
so
some reason. So.
If I need to.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Hi, my name's Corey Coulter.
What do you cosplay as?
I cosplay as Corey Coulter.
Okay, wait.
Corey Coulter from A Morbid Moment. And I actually have my own show, too.
Is that a podcast or is it a YouTube?
It's just YouTube right now.
It's a YouTube right now?
And we have it on Facebook, and we interview tons and tons of special guests. We have tons of talents, from Kent Wagner to all those fun jazzy people over there, Ann Mahoney. We're getting everybody on the show. Maybe we can get you on the show.
Oh, let me know.
You already have me on the show.
Yeah.
Hey, hi.
You got a card or something? Or
not.
Oh, you don't? My email is not on there.
Okay.
Let me give you a card. That way my email is on that.
Cool.
So just give me a...
That's wonderful. Christopher!
Yeah.
All right, everybody. So, make sure you keep tuned in with Mr. Christopher.
And catch...
He's the boo.
Catch her on... Miss Corey on her her show. Just do a search for...
A Morbid Moment
on YouTube.
A Morbid Moment with Corey Coulter.
And it will come up on YouTube and on Facebook. So keep an eye on her, see what she's got. And Kent Wagner was a hoot, isn't he?
Oh, I love him so much. He's such a good guy.
And he had to leave, folks at home, he had to leave a day early because he had a major audition today on Sunday. We hope he breaks a leg in the whole theatrical aspect of things, not physically. We do not wish that type of harm at all to
well,
Kent.
He did make it home, so I do know that. I got word that he made it home, and he's doing good. Yeah, he's got so many faces.
Yeah, so
I
many
love
faces.
It, you know.
So to hear our interview with Kent, just go back into our back catalog at valoncoatmafia.podbean.com, and it'll be there. So
wonderful.
I doubt it'll. iTunes or Google Play goes back that far, folks, so always visit our website for further details. So.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
And it's nice having
you
on.
Too. Thank you so much,
Christopher. No problem.
You rock.
Word. As stated, we are playing Destiny 2. We have someone else who wants to come on. So, like I said, these are things that are going to be happening. We're trying something new, folks. If you guys like it, you can always email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com and give us your opinion. And who do we have here today?
Robert Mason from Hagerstown. I work at Cartridge and Gore down on Duke Highway. We open on Monday to Saturday from 7 to 12 to 7 and Sunday from 12 to 5.
Who are you here to see today, or who are you going to see today?
I just met one of my friends today, like since yesterday. The one was sitting on the end of the table, newspaper reader. I just met Rita up front, but I met the other lady that paid me today that got the stamp, and she's pretty nice, and this is my first time being here, so I'm having a lot of blast around here, and see all the characters from anime, comic, like the old school, like Superman, back in the 90s, I was born in the 80s, so it's taken me way back for a long time, so that's why. And it's pretty awesome around here, so, like Deadpool's
are usually a standard.
Well, Deadpool's cracked me up, so he's a good one. So, I mean, like, any character that I know that's like Poison Ivy, Batman, Harley Quinn, who's the other one? WWE, like Hall of Fame, I can't pronounce his name, the guy who's back the old school.
Today, here at the show, we have Action Smash from old school tag team Demolition.
That's the Demolition.
Hall of Famers.
Yeah, and there's more than the Hall of Famers.
Nikolai Volkoff is. I don't know if he was supposed to be here yesterday.
No, he was. He's
here today.
He's here today. I met. He might be somewhere on the other side.
He's down.
Right, probably on the other
near
side.
Near the convention's entrance.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He's the best. I mean, he knows the tag team with John Rainbow from NWL. I knew she wrestled for NWL. I'm a former 2-time champion. It's pretty awesome around here. I mean, looking at everybody's faces, happy, joined today. And it's pretty awesome to hang out with like a family that I know everybody, but not everybody. But I know the one lady that's sitting over at that table with the sticks right there. She's a good person to me. That's fun. And I mean, I'm happy to be around here because this wild is that. That's how it is. It's good.
Well, I do thank you for being on. I just want to see if I get a couple more people.
Okay.
So,
I mean, just to let you know, be look up on, if you have all kinds of games, like old school, like PS1, PS2, 3, 4, Xbox One, GameCube, and then stuff, you can reach me or reach the store 243-707-6110. Look up on our Facebook. We got like tons of games, and you can make sure you look around, and we be open 12-7 from Monday to Saturday, 12-5. On Sunday.
No problem. Again, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Again, folks, we're live. Anything could happen. I'm going to see if I could call one person over right now. And see if I could get one other. Good afternoon, ladies. And like I said, a lot of things. Feel free to take a flyer. We are right now. We're kind of recording live for our show, so anything can happen. Things will happen today. We don't know what's going to happen. So can and will happen today. And let's see if I can get her attention. Things are kind of picking up on the show right now. I might have to pause. So if there's a different odd breaks every now and again, that is why. Let's see if I can call her over. Hey, Lady Che, come on over for a moment. So we are alone. Now, let me tell you about this particular cosplayer. Her name is Lady J. She had a panel here yesterday, folks, about cos positivity. I'm going to see if I can. You're not Lady J. You're Big Candy's missus.
Okay.
So, here with us on the show, I got her over here. She's a well-known cosplayer. She goes by Lady J. She had a panel here yesterday about cos positivity.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and speak about it?
Sure.
I'm sure the folks at home would love to hear a little bit about that and what you have to say.
Thank you, and thank you for saying well-known. I wouldn't say that about myself, but I appreciate it. Cos positivity is just stressing the importance of how cosplay is for everyone. It doesn't matter your gender, your skill type, your age, your weight, I think I said skill level already, but it doesn't matter any factor. Cosplay is for everybody, and as long as you're having fun and you're doing the character you want to do, that's the only aspect that matters of cosplay.
As a cosplayer yourself, what are the major pitfalls that happen, or I should say you get as a cosplayer, that you've seen as a cosplayer?
Well, I've been very fortunate where I've only had a few negative comments, and it was mostly about my weight. But what I see other people doing, and this is stressing cosplay, is comparing themselves to other cosplayers. Like, if they have the same cosplay on, and not in a good way, but in the bad way. Like, oh, theirs look 20 times better, mine suck. And you don't, you shouldn't do that, because you put your own time and your effort and your money and whatever you had to put your cosplay together, and you did the best you could. So we stress that if you're comparing yourself to somebody, try to grow from it. Like, if you love their belt versus your belt, you know, ask them how they did it, or, you know, where they got it from. But don't compare it in a way where you down yourself, because you should be proud of what you put into it. So that's the most I've seen other cosplayers do to themselves, is compare themselves to others in a negative way.
Having a lot of people on my Facebook who do cosplay, I tend to see a lot of, I want to say the flotsam and jetsam of the cosplay world, you know, seeing the pros, the fun, the hate,
right.
Meaning that I see a lot of people, some, like yourself, Kaylee, going to see what it takes to, what makes the outfit. You yourself here today are as Elektra.
Yes.
From your take, because you're not only someone who is on the heavier side of things.
Right.
You're also a person. I'm trying to put this as politely as,
no
as I can.
Problem.
You're also a person of color.
Right.
Have you spoke about the negative aspects in reference to receiving hate about your weight? Have you also received any hate in reference to being a person of color?
No, actually I haven't. I've seen it with other cosplayers, and it angers me, because, like I said, it doesn't matter your race. You cosplay any character you want. The only thing you shouldn't do is blackface, and that's a term where you change your skin color to be a character, but it depends on how you do it. Like, if you're changing your color to be orange, like Starfire, perfectly fine. It's not another actual race. But blackface comes from back in the day when it was negatively done as just a straight black face. And you guys can look more on the history of the term blackface. But when it's done in that way, and a lot of people don't do it purposely, that's when it's wrong. So I've seen some cosplayers get trash for blackface. But the thing that the cosplayers have to remember, that some people are ignorant to it. Like, you shouldn't automatically jump to negativity jumping down their throat, especially overseas cosplayers where racism isn't as prevalent as it is in America. They don't necessarily realize, like, they think of it as being makeup art and trying to be true to the character. They're not realizing it's blackface. So to jump onto somebody without knowing their reason behind it.
Their culture.
Right.
Like the aspect of Japan.
Right.
That they might, we're not promoting
right.
that sort of thing. In their culture, they're saying, hey, I want to be Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury.
Right.
So them donning, they're not seeing it as a racial thing, as an insult. They're trying
right.
to actually be true
and
to
be
the
lit.
Character.
Exactly.
In a way that some cosplayers are trying to be true to a character
right.
instead of, where if they try to do it here, it's there might be that outrage.
Right.
I know I saw something come across my Facebook feed, because I'm friends with several cosplayers. Mm-hmm. Someone tried to, I'm sure you're familiar with Pokemon, there
yeah.
was that one particular Pokemon that was kind of altered or censored due
right.
to it came off as someone in blackface,
right, right.
Old school blackface.
Right,
I'm going to say it, try to say it like
right.
that, old school
yeah,
blackface.
I remember the
and
character, yeah.
the person went to a Comic-Con dressed as that. And there was so much outrage, and I was like, all right, where's the gray area, and where's the line? You're trying to be true to a fictional character,
right.
Or to kind of do Ben Affleck, fictional character.
Yeah.
Ease off a little bit. But
right.
with cosplay, there is that gray area. It's a fine line. Like, well, there is a line, and you just got to step back.
Be careful, yeah.
Be very careful. I tell a lot of people, it's like, you have to ask. I was speaking to a friend of mine who is a person of color, I'm going to put it like that, that there's that 60-40, I try to do a 60-40 rule, where the 60 falls. If it's 60% funny,
right.
40% wrong, go with it.
Yeah.
If it's 60% wrong, 40%
right.
funny, don't. But if you're unsure, don't.
Or
don't.
Ask somebody before or you
ask,
do it. Yeah.
Or ask them, like, I tell him something. I was going to say this. He said, and if he laughs at it, and I'm like, okay, now I know it's funny. Or there was a, I don't know if you've seen it on Facebook. There is, they did this skit. There was, the skit was called "The Only Time a White Person Is Able to Say the." You've seen it. I shared it because I found it funny, and I said I was skeptical about putting it up because I do have a lot of people of different communities.
Right,
like, I'm not sure if people, because I find it funny. I'm a familiar. Grew up with a lot of people like, dude, you gotta watch Cat Williams,
right,
or you gotta watch Richard Pryor,
right, right.
And I grew up with that, and I'm loving that type of jokes.
Yeah.
And one of my friends down in Florida, he's I don't want to say stereotypical, but he's both of us combined weight wise, and he's like 6 foot tall, 6'2", and he's of the darker skin tone, and he wrote on my wall and was like, that was freaking funny. You know, it's like, if you get, in essence, a big black man laughing at something, it's funny. how long does it take? You didn't just come here as a lecturer this weekend. You also came out as the Yellow Ranger.
Yep.
How long did it take you to build that costume bring it together?
I sold the bodysuit, and I made the boots, and I altered the gloves. But the actual Green Ranger shield that I had on, I didn't make. My friend Johnny B. Props made it, so I'm not sure how long he made that. But a bodysuit takes me about 2 to 3 days. And then the gloves and the boots, because I was just altering them, they took about a day together. Because it was pleather that I was going through, so it was a little harder.
Well, what kind of, because you do you cosplay as other characters? you said Katana. Looking at your booth right here, it seems like you cosplay as Supergirl as well.
Yeah, I've done Velma, Spider-Girl, Polaris. The Yellow Ninjetti, every Yellow Ranger form from Mighty Morphin I could think of, I've done those. I've done Vixen, I've done Black Canary, I've done Storm, a couple versions of Storm. I did 10 from the Royal Flush Gang, the Batman Beyond, which is not as done very often. I did Harley, I've done Batgirl, and I probably have done some I'm forgetting, the Wasp. Yeah, I can't think of any more. But I have a whole... Oh, Black Queen's one I did yesterday. Jean Grey's version. And I did a VR Trooper cosplay because Carla Flores was here. I did her character from VR Trooper. Zictor's Beauty. It was like the girls used to stand behind Grimlord at the desk.
Which one has been the most fun for you to
Well, with kids, to be? The most fun is the Yellow Ranger and Batgirl because they love her. They love the Ranger and they love Batgirl. Personally, I think my favorite is Storm, just one of my favorites growing up. Oh, and I did Chitara. She was fun. She's not my favorite to wear, but one of my favorite characters to act like, just because of the makeup. And I have one more favorite, and I was easy cosplay, because a lot of cosplays that are easy where we can actually go to the bathroom. It's Velma. Velma is really fun. People love Velma.
Any words of advice for those who wish to cosplay, especially girls out there, especially young women that might be nervous about cosplaying? Any words of wisdom to them?
Yeah, start with something you're most comfortable, and if you can sew or if you can't sew, like, it all depends on your comfort level, but if you can't sew, start with like a closet. Like I said, I mentioned Velma is a closet cosplay. It's really easy. You just buy a sweater, you buy a skirt, you know, and you could do that at your own comfort zone. Like, if you want a sweater that's V-neck, you can get that. If you want a sweater that covers your neck, you can get that. Like, so start with the one that you can make comfortable for yourself and that you can make at your skill level that you can afford to buy. That's the easiest way to start.
And
pick a character that you love.
As always, with loads of friendly cosplayers like Lady J and Kelly Marie and very others that are here today at Forest Date, if you're new to cosplay and you have questions, feel free. There are a lot of friendly cosplayers that will help you out, that do panels that will help you or tell you how to put together your own cosplay and give you hints and tricks. So don't be afraid.
You can certainly message me. Most of my pages is Lady J Cosplay. Sometimes it's an underscore, depending on, you know, Facebook or Instagram. But me and, like, I'm sorry. I'm
it's
too
okay,
sleepy, guys.
It's Sunday. No one's. I don't
yes.
think.
I'm sorry, but like,
I haven't cold proofed my house yet. And last night was cold, and I wasn't really sleeping too well. I was trying to catch up on 3 hours sleep, and like it's like, oh, it's too cold in here right now.
But yeah, message. The 95% of us will answer you back and have no problem. So don't be afraid to message anybody.
I know. I'm familiar with Jo
what?
Carlton, and
yes.
she's very funny. And
yes.
One of those, like, I've ribbed her. I had her on the show once before to promote her G.I. Joe group,
The
Finest. I've shared her live streams when she's doing her live stream, making her stuff. And it's like I've ribbed her a couple, many friendly ribbing, because that's one of the things when you're not so much friends, but you're familiar with cosplayers. And Jo has at times said a few things that I've called her out and like, what are you thinking?
That's awesome.
Because it's like, you know, I know she was doing. I think she was wrapping herself to do the fitting for, I think, her armor.
Yeah,
and it's just the funny, you know, the way she was humorously walking everybody through a bit and wrapping, like, Jo, what are you doing? And I just got home from work, and it was just like, this does not look right, Jo. What? You're talking about wrapping yourself in plastic and using Vaseline. What are you talking? If I didn't know any better, it'd be somebody like, that's the look I had. You know,
she was body casting.
She was body casting. You know, it's
for cosplay.
Honestly, it was.
It wasn't me.
That was one of my responses. Like, what are you doing here? What are you doing in your spare time? They should not be posting this on Facebook, Joe. But she is very nice, and she's very friendly.
And helpful.
And she's a hugger.
Yeah.
She's a hugger. And I'm like, Joe, don't hug. I'm not really that big. But she is fun, very approachable. She
and
does good work.
I have a habit of calling everybody by, like, their cosplay. Like, for the longest, you know, I met Katie, and she was Supergirl. So for the longest, Katie was Supergirl, and you know.
If I know that usually is my issue. Since I'm familiar with like you and Kaylee, a little bit of like Sharon, if I see on Facebook that, because I know there are a lot of cosplayers that adopt the personality of their who they're cosplaying as, and if I see on Facebook as let's use yourself, like, hey, I'm going to be the yellow Power Ranger, so I'm going to be in that personality this weekend. I know that I'm going to say, hey, you know, yellow Power Ranger, you know, or whatever you're doing or character you're doing. But there's a few that we have somebody as Godzilla walking by. But there have been a few instances where the person that I've seen dressed up as either Elektra or somebody else, that I know them by their audio podcasting, I'm using air quotes, their cosplay name, like Lady J or Kaylee Marie. I know them as their cosplay name, and I approach them and I'll go, hey, Lady J, and they're or whatever their name is, and they're dressed up as Harley Quinn or Supergirl, and they look at me like, no, I'm Supergirl.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know you as this. Please, break character. You know? Come on.
Yes.
But for the most part, feel free to take a flyer, too, if you want one. But sometimes if I don't know who you are, it's going to be, hey, whatever, if I recognize
Here's
the character.
Katie. You should join us, Katie.
Hold on. I got extra mic ports. Hell, come on. Who are you dressed up as?
Hi, my name is Katie. I'm Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones. Thrones.
Yeah, she looks awesome.
We enjoyed ourselves a little too much last night, probably.
How long did it take you to put your costume together?
It really only took a few days. This was something we had a shoot coming up, and they needed a cow, so I volunteered, and I was just like, all right, let's get this done like as soon as possible. It's super comfy.
You should see it. It's like leathery and armory. She's like, it's 2 days. I'd be like, it took me 2.5 weeks.
Now, I'm here on, as you guys probably, folks at home have seen me post that, I'm at the end of Cosplay Row, which means I get to look at you. I do apologize here on air. You lovely ladies.
How dare you?
So it's like, especially the distraction that is not yet today, it's like, don't want to stare, don't want to stare, don't want to stare. Why am I staring? Don't want to stare, don't want to stare.
We'll stare right back at you.
I was kidding with my co-host who has a booth. It's like, I should make, just take one of my flyers. I have a black, thick black Sharpie and like, I'm not staring and just hold it up and just... I'm sorry, and just stare. But that there is that, obviously, that with the outfits that some of you ladies do wear, there is that creep factor. How do y'all tend to handle something like that?
It really doesn't bother me as long as people are respectful. Like I obviously know that I am, let's just say, putting myself out there, some parts more than others. I mean, if it's me, like, Jamila's a hottie toddy. Like, I'm going to check Jamila out. And
Is she the one in the shiny today?
No, she's the one sitting next to you.
I know her as Lady J. I'm sorry. I was like, that's the one I was like, shiny.
Friend, Lady J.
It's like squirrel, you know.
I call her Jamarim.
Yeah.
No, I think you just kind of like, you know, I don't take offense to it. Like, if it's me, I'm going to look as well, but I think it's just a respectful thing. Right. You know, it's like seeing like a nice car. I'm going to look at it, but don't touch it.
It's like we were talking about, me and Lady J were talking about Jo Colton, and that I've seen her in outfits similar to yours, and skin-tight outfits similar to what Lady J's wearing, and to see her switch up to a more risque outfit or something that might be tastefully done, I'll say tastefully done, and I'm not going to be the, it's like, I understand that she's, every cosplayer that is of the thinner mindset, I don't mean to insult you, of the thinner mindset has the I want you to have my babies. You know that. You know the creeper comments.
I want to have Lady J's babies.
Yeah, you know the creeper posts on Facebook forth and so on. And it's like, it's not that I don't want to be that. It's like, I see a line, I'm not going to cross it. If I come off, it's like you. I might say you look great, but you're getting 1,500 comments saying you look great. You know, it's like, you know what? I'm just going to post a like, but if you switch up to that taste, like, and I don't, the regular theme is that you're not really doing the tastefully, one-time tastefully nude type of thing, then my like is going to go from that to the new shock, face.
The wow
face, you know, like, wow. That's about, and it's like, okay, I'm going to be right here on the safe side of things. And
It's fine, though. A compliment is not a bad thing.
Right.
If done in good taste. Like, you could easily say, like, wow, you look fantastic. That's not creepy. That's I'd be like, thank you, because I ate 7 donuts this morning, so thanks, you know? Like, it's okay to compliment each other.
I know one... Go ahead.
Sorry. People have to remember, too, that some people are special, and so they shouldn't come off as creep. Like, somebody might stare too long.
Right.
And it might just be because they don't know, like, they're not socially aware, or some sort of, you know, special.
This is Comic-Con. We're all awkward.
Yeah. So, you know, you got to give them a chance. If they stare too long and don't bother you, then, you know, that's fine. Let them keep going.
I've never been hurt by a stare.
Exactly. You know, so it's people just have to be aware, you know, keep yourself safe, but also just be mindful that not everybody knows social cues.
Yeah. And as someone that's on not this, just this side of the table, but on sometimes on the guest side of the table, that I tend, like, wait a minute, I know how big I am. And I was telling Kaylee this the other day when I was at Otakon a few weeks ago, that there was someone, as most cosplayers like yourselves tend to do, with an outfit similar to the Electra, a lot of, you wear the
oh yeah, don't get paint on you.
the leggings, because of how the outfit is portrayed, and she didn't have the leggings. From what I can tell, it you're dressed up as Miss Marvel.
Right.
It's gonna, the outfit's gonna, if you're not wearing leggings, the outfit's gonna ride up somewhere.
Right.
And that the space between us, like, yeah, I can fit, but it's gonna be, the margin of error is going to be too close for my comfort, and I don't want, even though I'm gonna put my hands as deep in my pocket as I possibly can, I don't want her to take things the wrong way and walk out of there with a hand slap, you know, handprint on my face.
Right.
So I waited, you know, the courteous thing to do is, you know, at least wait, and or at least say excuse me, one of the two. So I'm like, I'm tired, I'll just wait. And I told her, she's like, at least thank you for the courtesy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
it's just about being courteous.
Yeah.
And considerate.
Yeah.
And I've had also friends with a she's now a new mom, so she is taking a step back from actual doing modeling, and she's not a cosplayer, but she's a model, and one of the things I've noticed about her, it's not just everything below the eye, the face level, it's that she's got piercing blue eyes,
right?
And it's one of the things that I've always said, it's like, listen, your eyes are great. I'm actually looking at your eyes. You know, it's like, yeah, you're physically attractive, but yeah, I'm looking at your eyes. Because that's one of the things that I'm... it just draws.
Yeah.
And one of the photographers that she used brought out the eyes. Uh-huh. It was almost... If you remember the original Dune,
yeah,
you know, how the characters had the eyes were just highlighted. She's got those type of, almost that type of blue eyes, and it just, you know, hey, the photography really brought out, you know, the eyes. I was talking about her aspects of the photography, even though all the while everything below the neckline was censored out because of Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
It's like the eyes. Look at,
right.
I can't believe the eyes. And she's like, well, you're the first person to notice the eyes. I'm like, there you go.
Everybody and, has their thing.
And she teamed up with another model, and I was like, I'm afraid of this photo. And she's like, why? And it's like, the way you two are looking, even though it was tastefully lingerie-esque, it was like, the way you two are looking, it's like, oh, look, here's another one. Let's eat them. You know, it was that, like, look, the way the pose and the photography was like, I'm scared. If I walked into a room and saw the way you two are modeled and positioned, I'd literally walk out. You know, so I'm sorry. I was hungry. I'm gonna, you know, I'll walk 3 miles to McDonald's thinking, I'm sorry. You know, but it's that I've come to understand, you know, again, hanging out with cosplayers like yourselves and photographers, it's the aspect of learning and understanding.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's just getting to know people and being respectful.
It's like, it's a time and a place, because even with photographers, they most, all of them, really good ones, like the ones we all work with, will ask, you know, can I move you here, like, before they move you, even if it's not, like, a weird place that they're moving, even if it's just your elbow, they're like,
they
can
ask.
I move you here? Yeah,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's always the aspect, as yesterday we had somebody here at Four State dressed up as Rogue.
Yeah.
And there, as cosplayers, I'm sure there's the aspect of a safe touch, which means to demonstrate on you, it's like to touch you on the shoulder or
to get someone's
attention. Or especially if they're facing you, that they know that you're going to be touching a shoulder, not someplace inappropriate.
Right.
And I went up to her, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, to kind of make the fault. Like, but I'm not having skin. Well, it's the aspect of the joke, you know. But then again, she was faced to me.
Right.
She saw where, you know,
she
obviously
knew
she knew.
Yeah.
So feel free to take a flyer.
Speaking
we are
of
go
photography,
ahead.
Actually, I'm on my way to a shoot.
Oh,
sorry.
Take care.
Low key here.
Yeah. Take care.
Thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you.
Nice meet you.
Are you talking about
Jamaram? I'll be by your booth later.
All right. See
so.
You later.
I love you.
I love you too.
So, I'm happy to.
Thank you. Yes, I'm
happy to have you.
Time. I had the trivia contest.
So go ahead.
No, we're good.
Plenty of time. Yep, that's her. That's her.
Yep.
That's the one I took yesterday.
Yeah.
So, happy to have you on.
Thank
Why don't
you.
Want to have you on talking about the cause positivity and have you on to talk about cosplay as well.
Yes.
And again, folks at home, we're recording live today. It's something new. It's a live show that we've wanted to try out at a show and see if everything works. It's fun. Thank you. If she's not busy again, we'll see if we could pull Kaylee Marie and have her talk about her her cosplay. What took?
She looks great. She's the bunny.
She's the bunny.
Yeah.
So
I'll get home.
She tends to be busy, so we'll see. I'm going to just pause a moment so we can get something to drink, folks. See if. Oh no, it don't want to work. Either way, we're going to have to. There we go. Because I don't. Folks, in front of me is Kaylee from Kaylee Cosplay. Kaylee Marie Cosplay. She's dressed up as Judy Blume. I'd ask you to sit. Judy Hopps.
Okay.
I'd ask you to sit, but you're. If you want to sit, I don't know.
I just have to watch my
movie. I know. That's why it's like if you want to stand. It's up to you.
For a little bit.
And I didn't know about the tail, so that's why we just had on folks. We just had Lady J cosplay on, and now we have Kaylee Marie, who was dressed up as Judy Hopps from Zootopia. How long did it take you to put together the outfit?
I put it together relatively quickly. I think I put it over maybe about a week or two, making the armor and all the. Armor details, because a lot of people do Judy and they sew the entire outfit, but I really wanted it to look more like a police SWAT team outfit, so I did armored bracers and knee pads and a chest plate.
So you do a lot of the I know you don't just do Judy from Zootopia, you've done other characters from X-23. Mm-hmm. You've done, I know Saturday here at the show, you've done Spider-Gwen.
Yes.
Who else have you done?
I've done two different versions of Thor. I do a lot of Spider-Man verse characters, so I've done Spider-Gwen, classic Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane. I'm trying to think what else, because there's so many. Angela of Asgard. Ooh, so many.
The Thor variants, if you want to say that, have you done the armor or have you kind of...
Yes, I've made the armor. I make most of all my own costumes, so all the armor and the props are mine, unless I specifically say so. I have started to get more into the sewing aspect. I usually don't do the spandex suits like the spider suits or my Wolverine spandex suit. I usually have those commissioned because I really do not like sewing spandex. I'm pretty sure it's the devil. But I'm just going to go with that. But oh yes, I do make a lot of my own.
So it's you do the leather or do you do the whole molding route at all? Because I know that when we spoke to here on the show, Lady J, we spoke about Jo Colton, that she did, when she did her armor, mm-hmm. she went through the process of the molding and the wrapping and the resin.
Oh, yes.
So
I don't do the resin. I use EVA foam, so I don't use Warbler or anything. So mine's just foam, like those foam mats that you find in the garage, or they're like big rolls that you can put on in an exercise room. So you wrap yourself in cellophane and duct tape, and you draw the pattern on you. Cut it off, and then you have like a perfectly formed pattern for your body, and you transfer that over to foam, heat it up, mold it together. There's a couple extra processes in there, but you end up having a nice, inexpensive piece of artwork.
And how long does it normally take you to do something like that?
It honestly depends. My Judy Hopps didn't take me as long because it's a relatively simple design. I did do a lot of research, but something like my Angela armor, that took me about 3 months working straight. So 3 months over the summer that I would get up in the morning, continue to work until I got tired, and then do it all over the next day repeatedly.
Well, which one has been your most favorite to do?
I have two favorites. I have the one that I had commissioned is Wolverine. That's one of my absolute favorites to interact with fans and Wolverine lovers. The one that I've made from scratch will always be my Thor, just because Thor holds a special place in my heart.
So, what kind of advice do you have to the, I don't want to say amateur, but the fans out there that want to do their own little bit of a cosplay that they're not on the same level as you, but would like to dabble a little bit?
I would say research. Research has gotten me through so much of my cosplay, so asking other cosplayers, hey, where do you get your tips and tricks from? I specifically say for armor, if you want to do foam, I recommend Evil Ted Smith on YouTube. He will tell you step-by-step the process of how he patterns, how he transfers it to foam, how he molds it, and why to do it certain ways. And then I've just been learning when sewing. I've been going to Joann's and teaching myself how to read the patterns and just figuring it out. It's a learning process. You're not going to be perfect the first time.
The reason why I ask is because even though she hasn't been on the show in a while, when she's asked some cosplayers that might be on a tier higher than, I'm not knocking you, they're more on the upper tier, how they've done their outfits or where they've, you know, as you know, sometimes you have to commission certain aspect, either a helmet or what have you, because you either don't have the equipment or it's better off getting it commissioned. And there, every time she's asked, like, how'd you do, like, the ears or something like that, their response was, well, I went out to Party City and bought it. But the attitude, the aspect was, I didn't do it myself. I just went out and bought all my outfits. The attitude was, like, I don't have the time to associate with someone like you. I'd rather say I went out and bought it.
Right, and you know what? Cosplay is for everyone. It doesn't matter if you build your own cosplay.
I'm not knocking them or you.
And I know there is that attitude out there, but personally, I don't mind if you buy your entire cosplay or commission it. Cosplay is for everyone. All shapes, sizes, skill levels. We're just all geeks in cosplay, honestly.
And I think at the time, I kind of agreed with her because there was, when I went to one or two conventions that had the upper tier cosplayers that were the quote-unquote famous cosplayers, the ultra-famous cosplayers, and it seemed like they had their nose not in the center of their face, but more so on their chin, that they looked down on everybody else. Everybody else was the peon.
That's,
you know, that the, you know, I think that's where my co-host was coming from. That the cosplayer that she tried to get advice from was, well, Kaylee's, I'm happy, even though we can't really, she's one of the popular cosplayers here, like Lady J, so I'm happy to have her on.
I
hope she,
for a few minutes. I'm
no
sorry,
problem,
to
she's got a hop, she's been like a busy bunny, so there's that, we're happy to have her on.
Thank you so
no
much.
Problem, so take care, hope you had
you
fun
too.
Today,
thank
and you.
You
have somebody right here, a little girl wants to, so there's that. We're happy to have Kaylee. I'll have links to her Instagram and her Facebook here as well. I have to probably put notes to that. I don't know why my thigh was buzzing. I thought my phone went off. Must have been one of those phantom things. So let me see that. I'm going to put this on pause and come back later. I know I have to finish my Destiny 2 review. You know what? I'm going to do that now while I have time. I'm going to go back because it's been a little bit of a while in reference to that. The benefits of Destiny 2 is that with the in Destiny 2, there are public strikes. And on the map, you're told where these public strikes, public events are. And you can easily get to them using the now fast travel system. I know there's a lot of people posting on Twitter and Facebook saying, hey, that there is this whole aspect of that Destiny 2 feels like a more so as a patch or a replacement or what would have been a better rendition of the first one. But so far, this doesn't feel like that. My main concern was that, yes, that in the sequel, the main boss was a DLC strike boss. So, in essence, I could see where the hate is coming from for that. There seems to be a better loot drop with this, and a lot of things seem to be sanded down and feel a little bit better. I'm not fully towards the end yet. Some of the things I do dislike that the folks at Destiny have yet to fix. I know each game has to be their own thing or do their own thing. Destiny tends to ramp that aspect up by still having the restrictive areas or the restrictive spawn areas, which means you could be at 90% of this 45 minute ass part of the game in this restrictive zone, die and tossed all the way back to the beginning, where in some restrictive zones it seems more so checkpoint based. And hold on a little pause, a little second. As I was saying, in reference to Destiny 2, I haven't dabbled in the strikes yet, so I can't really. When we have more time and our next hostful, I'll give you a better review that way, and also have Big Candy and hopefully Zombie Bunny with us in reference to a discussion about it, and that way get questions asked to me in reference to what about this, what about that. But overall, I like it. But again, now I remember what I was talking about was the restrictive spawn zones. It's that aspect. Some restrictive spawn zones seem to be have checkpoints where others do not. So there's that. There's some of the bosses that I've seen don't seem to be like bolt sponges, but some do. So they kind of fixed it. They did fix the loot drop a little bit. Let's see. Again, I haven't played the strike zones yet or any of the raids. They claim to have fixed a lot, but it has been a lot of hate surrounding Destiny 2, one of which is a shader issue, wherein the first Destiny, the original Destiny, if you got a what's called shader, and shaders do is they change the armor color, the weapon color, so forth and so on. They lasted the whole game, which means if you got the the Superman red or the Green Lantern green, so to speak, they stayed with you all game. You didn't have to worry about it. The shaders now are one-time use only. And which means if, hey, I like this armor, I want it painted green. And you apply that shader, but you in one or two missions later, or one or two strikes later, you find something better, better armor, or what have you, an armor that has better light or looks better, you just wasted your favorite green shader. And in order to get that particular shade back, or shader, or that color back, you either have to grind for God knows how long to get that particular shader back, or pay real life money for silver, and hopefully, by chance, get it back. Now, the game director has come on record saying that the shader drops and the one-time use is supposed to be to improve gameplay, last the gameplay, each section from Earth to Titan to where the strikes are. Each section is supposed to have its own shader cluster and different shaders. So that's why we did this. And the overall fan response to this has been either A, horseshit, B, yeah, right, or C, only you believe in this or you want to do this. So that's them. A lot of fans are like, yeah, only you would want to do this, only you want to would believe this. We don't. So that's that for right now, until I get to play the game. some fans, from what I hear, have stated that why didn't they get their game exclusives, like I think it was a gun and some armor. Gun and a ghost. I think the exclusives were, and because I got them too, we were then told that you get them at the end of the game and you have to be at least a level 20. And I kind of see that, and it seems fine. So I have no problem with that. But I'll give you guys my overall ranking about it. But once I can put the game and start playing the strikes and see how everything feels and doing the patrols. At once I thought the patrols were immediately part of the game. It turns out they're separate, like it was in the first one, a separate area. But it kind of works. There is a better story to this, and instead of the whole aspect of, we don't have time to tell you that we don't have time to tell you. So there's that. So there will be a part two to this review. Hopefully it'll be with better sound. Again, we do apologize for some of the breaks. This is a live broadcast that we're trying now. Therefore, there's a lot of background noise for us. So for now, we're going to pause again, come back in a little while. Now that our Destiny 2, I'm going to at least agree with this, that the rating, as somebody has stated through Twitter, that this is rated a Nathan Fillion out of 10, and I kind of like that rating, so I'm going to agree with that rating until I complete the game and see the overall feel and what others think of it as well, see if they correlate with what I have to say. So I'm going to pause right now, and when I come back, I'll reintroduce myself and who I might be talking to. So it's like, hey folks, we're back, and you didn't even realize we were gone. How about them apples, huh? With me today, I have...
My name is Kyle Riss.
And you are an independent either writer, or are you an independent writer?
I'm a writer and comic producer, I guess would be the way I would go for it.
So you're here promoting what work?
This is my first comic book that I've launched. It's called Primal Instinct. It's a sci-fi dinosaurs in space epic that I like to describe as a cross between Jurassic Park, Battlestar Galactica, and Starship Troopers. It's like those real campy sci-fi films, over-the-top acting, ridiculous concepts, plain absurdity. It's a lot of fun to make.
Before we go into a lot of, not so much the details of the comics and being an independent comic producer, where can we find your work, so, other than your booth at a show like this?
So currently, there's a few copies left around at X-Ray Comics in Greencastle, Atomic Comics downtown in Hagerstown. You can also find all three issues that are currently available on Comixology for digital distribution. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and everything like that. So this is just the first comic I've launched. I've got four more planned for next year, so we're really about to bust out here.
Now, for the folks at home, walk us through the process in putting together an independent book.
So, like, particularly with Primal Instinct, I've had this idea in my head for years and years, like all writers do with their, you know, their babies and stuff. But with this one, it was, I think, December of 2015, I decided I was finally going to make this comic book. So I sat down, plotted it out, started doing the scripting, and I put the ad out for an artist because I can't draw for anything. So I ended up meeting a man named Jeremy Meggert who lives in Dallas, Texas. And we met through digital webbing. I'd put an ad up, and I'd gotten some 150, 200 responses. But his artwork really stuck out to me. So we started working together. We would just bounce scripts. I would bounce a script back and forth, and we'd do the concept art and everything. And we talked a lot. We ended up emailing. We were texting all the time and Skyping and everything. So then we brought on Tobin, who also who got recommended to us by a friend of a friend who lives on the West Coast somewhere. I think he's in Canada. I'm not entirely sure. Sorry, Tobin. So we all got together through the internet. I've never actually met Tobin, and I only met Jeremy the one time in Dallas this past April. So basically, you know, you write the script, you give it to the artist, they take it, do some rough outlines. We talk about it a lot, start getting the final pages in. We make some tweaks here and there based on, you know, the artist does their thing. If there's things that I, you know, there are things I write that Jeremy did a lot better, you know, than I had anticipated, or a different vision for it and everything. So it's just a lot of bouncing back and forth. It's a comics are a collaborative effort. That's like the most. That's the thing I can stress the most about it. It takes a village to make a comic book, really. And it took months and months to just put the first issue together. We started production on it in January of 2016, and the first issue became available in August of that year. So, you know, you take these 22 to 35 page comic books, and, you know, people read them in 10, 20 minutes, but you got to think, I mean, we put months and months and months behind just getting it out there.
So there's always that aspect of, you might have the vision of what the characters, I won't say sound like, but will say and how a scene looks, but it's the artist that would actually say, I want it, how's this look? Is it better than what you had, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why Jeremy's the artist and I'm the writer. I can write all the livelong day, but Jeremy can, you know, he visualized things better than I ever could from head to paper. And, you know, you can ask Tobin, too. I'm sure there's been some frustration. But we'll get the pages in. I'll have the original dialogue or the captions or whatnot and everything. Then I'll see the art, and I'll tweak it just to fit the art. And, you know, maybe, you know, something speaks to me better on the page. Or I'll have a real long diatribe by a character, and then I'll see the art, and, like, I don't need it. Like, the image speaks for itself. So, yeah, it's definitely... I'm glad we worked well together. So,
are there any misconceptions of being an independent comic producer that people do not know about?
Well, the number one thing I always get asked at any show that I'm at, no matter what, is, oh, you're the artist. And I say, no, I'm the writer. And I swear, for something like 60 to 70% of people I meet still, outside the comic book world, of course, don't realize that comics have writers. So, like, the biggest misconception I get is that they just think artists slap some stuff on the page and there's a comic book. They don't realize, like, you know, all the process that goes behind it. I guess the other misconception, too, is that everybody thinks that I'm just trying to get this made into a movie, that this is just kind of like a step towards that direction, perhaps. Or, hey, you must be rolling in the money now, like that. You know, it's just, like, it's not about the money. It's never going to be about the money for me. It's about the passion. This is what I love. And if I wanted this to be a movie, I would have written it as a movie, not a comic book. You know, some things are better served in the comic book media. So, yeah, those are some of the misconceptions, I would say.
I know that a lot of people have stated that, I've had some discussions with people such as yourself, either artists or writers. I should have been reversed because you said you're a writer. That in events, the bigger aspects of a bigger con like an Awesome Con or Baltimore, the fans that you're able to sell your book to become, in a way, a bumblebee to the bigger folks that might be there, meaning the aspect of, I buy your book, if I don't have some place to put your book, I have to set it down on, if they're there, Marvel's table, on an Image table, or on a Vertigo table, or a Valiant table, and they get to see either your comic, or if you're the person's an artist, that person's art or the writing style. Therefore, we're spreading the word, in essence, in a way. We're free advertising, and we're also pollinating the cycle of the industry.
Right. I mean, definitely want people to carry the book around, and you know, you want them to carry the book in a way where that cover is showing to literally everybody they walk by. So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely cool. That's definitely a part of it.
And I know one of the independent writers that I spoke to one year, he wrote a story called Zombie Proof. And he didn't manage to get a cover art by a couple of the big people. And he said his sell to me was like, this is the only major character with his own theme song. And it's just pretty much with a little bit of a beat to it, the character's name just repeated over and over again, which was Billy Bob Driver. I blame him. Say, all the way home, say, yeah, I'm not going to have that stuck in my head. I'm going home, Billy Bob Driver. Oh, you saw him again like a year and a half. I'm like, you motherfucker.
Yep. Well, I mean, if it stuck with you, it did its job.
Right, and it's exactly. Like, how dare you? And he said, you know what? I got Billy Tushy with that too. I left it on his machine for a minute and a half. I did it. And he was like, really? And I think there have been times he's like, oh, you got one of his books, that bastard.
Yep.
Is there a I don't want to say it's a misconception, but is there a camaraderie? Damn you, lady cosplaying, your hard words. Now you have mispronouncing other words now because of your cos positivity. I used to pronounce other $5 words ever since cos positivity came along. I cannot pronounce other $5 words. Friendship amongst other writers and independent artists.
Yeah, definitely. That was the coolest thing. Last year, Baltimore was the first large con that I ever exhibited at. I had done Baltimore once when I was 19, and I did a comic book for an older, now defunct company called Shot in the Dark that I had done when I was younger, and that went really well, but this was my first time doing it all on my own, from writing, producing, everything. And the coolest thing about being an Artist Alley last year was, like, everybody around me were other comic book artists, and it was, for the first time, I felt I was meeting people who have... I've never known, didn't even know they existed until that time, but they were going through almost the exact same kind of experiences that I had been going through trying to get this made. And I was just talking to a friend of mine, Jordan Clark, at the last the Hagerstown Library Con. We were just talking about this, that comics is a really small community, and outside of it, no one really knows. It's a different form of art that no one really, unless you're in it, you don't know how it's going. So yeah, we tend to try to stick together when we can and talk. Like, I'm constantly texting some buddies I made last year. My buddy Scott that I met at Baltimore Comic Con all the time. We're all bouncing back and forth and ideas and everything like that. And I've got my friends outside the industry, but, you know, it's a special kind of friendship you have with people who are also making comics. So yeah, there's definitely that sense of camaraderie and everything with everybody. And it's really cool because, you know, we all want to break in together. We're all at the same stages in our career, more or less. And it's just really cool because, you know, we all have that dream, at least I do, of, like, being on a panel in 20 years and talking about, like, hey, remember when, you know, I'm talking about these smaller cons and the smaller things we do. And, like,
I know you were asked, I'm going to try to rephrase the question you asked someone who is recording either for a YouTube channel or the like earlier today, that when I was at the Martinsburg Pop Culture Show earlier this year, one of their mid-card level, to kind of use a wrestling term, mid-card level to upper tier artists that they had on hand, kind of mentioned to the library director that shows, small shows like library comic cons, which is probably beneficial to you guys, is gimmicky. It was the word that he used. Yeah. Do you think something like a library show or show like Four State is gimmicky, or
no? Absolutely not. I think it's exactly the kind of shot in the arm the industry needs. It's the grassroots campaign of the comic book and pop culture world. Really, these library cons, for instance, the last one I did at Hagerstown Library this year and years past, it brings in a crowd that don't know the world of comics. You know, you these kids who see these superheroes and characters on the large screen and everything, they don't know the source material. Now they're introduced to a whole new world that gets them reading and writing and creating themselves. So, you know, I would reject wholly the premise that these smaller shows are gimmicky. I think they're exactly what the industry needs. These large shows are great, but if anything, the larger shows like New York and San Diego, they've been hijacked by Hollywood and the movie industry and everything. And it's nice. So these smaller shows are good to keep the comic book world alive. So this is exactly what this industry needs.
It's one of the reasons why I've enjoyed... I've grown... I'm not knocking Baltimore. Baltimore's a good show. Mm-hmm. I've met the promoter not personally, but I've met him before, and thank you for running a great show. This is one of those things, being at a show so many times, you just grow tired of the same... He puts on a good show. Mm-hmm. Yes, in the past couple of years, he's peppered with a few media guests, but it's strictly 90%... comic books, yeah. So it's that aspect that you're celebrating.
Yeah.
Other than like a Wizard World that's strictly, we're going to be mostly pop culture, mm-hmm. and yeah, we're going to have some comic book artists there. So a lot of things are, the central theme of comics is kind of left out.
Yeah, I mean, that is my absolute favorite thing about Baltimore. I've been going to Baltimore Comic Con for 10 years, both as an exhibitor and as a ticket holder. My absolute favorite part of it is Artist Alley. And Baltimore has the best Artist Alley that I've personally been to, either been involved with or been to, because it's it's separated in its own way, but it's highlighted
right.
through that separation. And there, it's for me, it's been the best con I've seen for artists, at least in my experience, to get out there and put forth their work and get seen themselves. So now Baltimore is great because Baltimore is still comics centric. It's still focused on the comics. Their main guests are still comic writers and artists and comics creators. Like, they are still like 95% comics. And yeah, they get the cool media guests and everything. That's all well and good, and that's great, and that drives in folks and everything like that. But that's what I love about Baltimore, because it's still focused.
And with me, it's like when I hype up Baltimore, it's like, yeah, I don't go that much anymore. And it's not because I don't have a ride. It's that, you know, if I did, it's the, I've grown kind of, I need to take a break.
Right.
You know, the relationship between me and Polta has to have that little bit of a space before I go back. Just that it's a fun, you know, hey, I'm looking, my taste as a fan has grown from not just the independent aspect of things, because you get the fresh storylines, you don't have to worry, you guys get to be edgier than DC or Vertigo.
Well, I get to use, you know, I get to say fuck in my comic, where I otherwise wouldn't be allowed to say it, so.
Not
I say that on here, sorry.
Not, yeah, you're allowed. There's a reason why we use the explicit tag.
Okay. I'm a bartender by trade. I have a bartender's mouth.
So it's the aspect of that. I think a lot of fans are sketchy about artist alleys, because I know from a fan standpoint, going to Baltimore, we went to an independent booth. My buddy, who you saw here, picked up a $5 book. Granted, Baltimore $5 book, you can't go wrong. He said it was, in essence, the thickness of a graphic novel. The art varied from almost high-end Alex Ross style to literally stick figure.
Yeah.
And a bad stick figure at that, and it kind of stayed that way. And it was like, to him, it was like a waste of $5, yet you have the gems like yourself, and they were... At that point, when I had more money to spend, we met this one gentleman at in Artist Alley. He wrote and drew his own comic, and the art was fantastic. It was superb. And it's like, at that time, I was highly collecting page art myself. And I was like, dude, I got to ask, are you selling your art? And he said, no, I write for right now. I got to use it as part of my portfolio. And I, at that point, as a fan and a hobbyist, I completely understood.
Right.
And yet there's still some people that, to me, it's like, wait a minute, you're an independent creator. You're not an Alex Ross. You're not a J.G. Jones. You're not, you know, you're not big leagues. Don't, why are you charging big league stuff for, because I met that one independent person one year. It was like, I saw his artwork. It was amazing as well. And I said, how much for the page? He said, oh, none of the pages in that book are under $300. I'm like, really? You might be a major independent company, but you're not a major independent. Just because your books are selling well,
right,
doesn't mean you're an independent. If you understand where I'm getting,
well, I mean, any industry, and the comics industry is no stranger to it, or no exception. You have anything from the working class heroes
right.
to it, then you have the bourgeois pigs at the top, who are, you know, think their, you know, shit doesn't stink. But I mean, that's across the board in any form of art and anything.
Right.
And you take the good with the bad and the pretty with the ugly. So, but it's but like you were saying though, when you go through deep in Artist Alley, yeah, maybe not everything's all that great.
Right.
But the number one thing is that these people are creating. These people are doing what they set out to do. They have accomplished something, and in that, in and of itself, is a great thing.
I think when I mentioned about the aspect of the fans being the bees, and using that analogy. I think at the time I brought that up, that reference, it was when the whole aspect of Captain Underpants was still relatively new, and they haven't made it big yet, which they recently, I think, had a movie out.
Yeah.
But I mentioned it to them, and he said, you know, the same way you're kind of nodding now, is like, yeah, you're right, because you got to bring that book to a major, like, Dark Horse and so forth and so on. And as fans, me coming and saying, hey, I enjoy your art, I want to buy it. It's like, I've had some fans, I was like, hey, I got extra, cash, I want to buy your artwork. And it's like, wait a minute, why is it so, I've said that to some people, like, why are you charging $100, $150 prices, and he said, well, part of it is because it helped cover the table.
Right.
And when he said, because it was mid-low, like 50 to at the most 100. He said it's to help cover the table just in case the books are not selling that well. And that was almost, I'm like, okay, that's a better response other than the snarky, snobbish, like, just because I'm better than, you know, the snobby, I'm better than you. It's like, hey.
The other thing I would keep in mind, too, is, you know, when you're paying for these pages, these guys aren't doodling these out
right.
in 20 minutes. I mean, you're talking about like a day's worth of work for a comic book page. And so if they're selling it for $150 for a cover or something like that,
right.
you got to think they worked on that for 10 hours. You're paying them $15 an hour, which is completely sensible
yeah.
when you break it down like that. So when you're not... When you go into the artist and you see these high prices, it may not occur
right.
to everyone right then and there, but when you really break it down, you can kind of see the,
right.
the logic and the reasoning behind it. That
and
said, there are people who gouge others for prices,
right.
who, you know, who are charging too much, and there are people who charge too little, and that's just that's the nature of the game, I guess.
And I've met a lot of independent artists, like you said, that don't really gouge, and it's like, met one artist, like, hey, how much is, you know, this original? And it's like, how much you want to pay for it? I'm like, dude, I don't want to undercut you.
Right.
You know, and he said, all right, fine, how about $25? I'm like, really? And he said, dude, I could redo that in about 20 minutes.
See.
But that's the fun aspect. You
right.
get a couple of those great guys, like, hey, I could do this. And I'm not knocking Mark McKenna those guys. They do fabulous. The exclusive that McKenna drew was like $400. I was like, dude, as a collector, as a fan, like, dude, I would love to get that off you. I've gotten other artwork off you that I was able to afford. As much as I'll love that, to pick that up, I can't really afford
right.
that right now. But it's worth it. But
well, we've been doing it for decades, like McKenna and
right.
Silver over there. I mean, that's
right.
You know, that's you can get away with that. For me, one of the big things, like, I sell my comic book for $3, either at the shop I negotiate the deal or in the cons, I sell for $3 a pop. To me, it's not... Now, obviously, I'd like to recoup the money I've put into it. I've
right.
put in way more money than I've gotten out of it, and that's all well and good. It sucks, in a way. It's not paying the bills right now. But that's okay, because to me, it's all about the exposure. I have to get this book out here. So, like, the biggest advice I've gotten going to these cons and everything is that pitching isn't really working anymore. Like, taking your book to a publisher, getting them to pick it up and get them to print it and run it themselves, that's not really the name of the game anymore.
Not to mention they could edit it and chop
right.
it down. And
so the big piece of advice I've been hearing and getting from established creators or guys who just broke in or, you know, have been a couple, you know, seasoned vets, it's not about getting this book in particular. Like, I don't see Primal Instinct being sold by Image anytime soon. Would I love that? Absolutely. That'd be a dream come true. But for me, it's about getting these books and these projects out and showing that I can produce at a professional level, showing that I know how the art form works, showing that I know how to create and that I'm professional about it. And this will eventually lead to exposure to, you know, hopefully other
right.
you know, established editors and things like that. So the more work I put out, that work may not necessarily make me a big name, but it'll get me to a point where I can then it's another run on the ladder, you know. So that's the way I look at it.
It's the same, almost a similar thought process with what we do here. I'm giving out in essence content.
Right.
You're right. I'm educating you, the listeners, in reference to what's going on in the industry. And a lot of, bless you, if I can't, like today, again, folks, this is live. We're recording live on the show floor. Therefore, a lot of background noise.
Mm-hmm.
The audio might not be the best, but we're giving you great, if you pay attention, we're giving great content.
Right.
So that's why a lot of people say if you sacrifice audio, giving awesome content, am I going to be the next Joe Rogan, the next, you know, in the major celebrity podcaster, Adam Carolla? I'm not knocking these guys at all. I would love, like you said, I would love that.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to get their numbers, get their level of exposure, but I just try to get out content on a weekly basis, give them as much entertainment as possible and be informative.
Right.
As
absolutely. And you're providing an excellent service. I mean, this is fans who are interested in these things and can't always go. I ran into a guy yesterday, and I'm making a point here, I promise. But I ran into a guy yesterday who said he's from Montana. And this is his first comic show ever. And because there was nothing for him out there. There was like, he didn't even have, there wasn't even like his fellow nerds out in his school and everything where he could bond over that, you know, with them. This was his first like real direct firsthand exposure. So to the people who don't have the opportunity to come to these kind of things like that, a podcast like this or, you know, these articles that people write and everything about these cons are a great way. These are necessary to get these people out, to make these few people feel included even when they're not, you know, physically there. So, yeah
that's why I try to tell people. It's like, listen, I liked working with Matt in reference to Forest State because we do panels, we do interviews, like with you. If this, what we're doing today, again, folks, this is an experimental episode because it's our first attempt at doing something live. The first show that we've done with Matt, we tried a similar setup, but we didn't know what we were doing. It was completely by accident. That's why the sound looked and sounded like crap. So this time it's done on purpose for the sake of science. Right. And yes, I'm using air quotes for an audio podcast. But it's, again, it's the aspect of trying to get somebody in not so much in Montana, but granted we're a regional local podcast, but we're still trying to get the folks, bring that someplace. Hey, you can't get to a panel, you know.
Nope.
Hey, we got a panel right here for you. Yes, it's a Power Rangers panel. So, yes, I try to work with Matt, or if you had a panel about being an independent creator, I'll be like, hey, I got to set up in about an hour anyway. How about I set up now, record yours, I'll just put it up anyway.
Right.
And I've done that at last year's Forest State. It's like, I got to set up. No one's setting up. I'm like, how about I set up? You're going to be, don't know, how about I record anyway your show? I'll push it. And so, you know.
No, that's an excellent thing to be doing, too.
Right. So. And yes, I'm going to be a little bit behind the scenes. It's a way of me saying, it seems a little lazy, but between with what I get through interviews, through stuff like this, I have episodes for the next 3 weeks total.
Right.
So it's, yes, it seems like all I have to do is put everything together and post it up.
Yeah.
And after that, it's like, everything's up, I got the link, I'm going back to bed.
Yep, absolutely. No, that's good. I mean, why talk about the movie when you can just show it?
Right.
You know, show, don't tell. So, I mean, you can bring these panels to people, give them the panel directly instead of just talking about it. Yeah, that's,
right.
To me, it's the right course of action, so.
So, it, being this and doing what you do, it's like being variety. It's like, it's the, being an independent creator is the YouTube, I know it's a bad example, folks, like, you guys are going to say anything at home. You guys don't email us anyway, so there. in a way, is you guys are the YouTube to the... The way YouTube is to modern media, mainstream media, you guys are the YouTube to the DCs and the... Granted, Valiant's coming back, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You're trying to be the new independent creators to the... In essence, trying to be the outside. Hey, we're different. We're tired of the same old rhetoric that Marvel and DC is giving you guys.
Well, I mean, it's the natural order of progress.
Speaking of which, because it's you're independent. When you say, "Hey, I do," even though you're a bartender on the side, but you say, "I'm an independent writer. I do comics." Do you get the same stereotypical, you mean Superman, Batman, or Spider-Man, or...
I get a lot of people asking about superhero books and stuff like that. And I know a lot of people are weird about saying, you know, oh, I still read superhero books. Some people don't, like, I still love superhero books. I'm working on a superhero book. I want to write superhero books. And if that's the face of the industry to the common person, that's completely fine. And that's kind of what it is, isn't it? I mean, that's, comic books are 95% superhero books, right?
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, we do want to bring in diversity, you know, in terms of content, in terms of character, you know, we want to, you know, make the whole, comics don't have to be limited to that. But yeah, I don't, I get that answer a lot, or I get that question a lot about superheroes, and that's fine.
The reason why I brought up is like, a few people, it's like, oh, you're into comics. Superman, Batman, I'm like, well, there's a little bit more than just Superman, Spider-Man, and Batman. You have Transmet, you have Why the Last Man, you have The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
and you get the response every now and again. The Walking Dead it's in the comic long before it's been a TV show. And you have the Preacher. Oh, you mean like the show? It's been a comic long before.
Well, I mean, comics, like any other form of art, have something to say.
Right.
And that could be anything from, you know, giving inspiring hope through Superman or, like, my favorite comic book on the market right now is Saga, which is definitely not, decidedly not, a superhero book. It's very different than any mainstream book that was out there. It changed the landscape in a lot of ways. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I think I lost my train of thought here.
It happens. I'm sorry if I asked this prior. It's been a long weekend. Oh, what got you starting to, hey, I want to do this?
Well, two things. I've always wanted to be a writer, and I've always been into comic books, mostly because of my father. My father gave me his comic book collection. He helped me read and write and everything. And so he got me into comic books. But the catalyst for getting this book done actually was at Baltimore Comic Con 2 years ago. And I, for the life of me, I could not remember this girl's name. I couldn't tell you what the book was about or anything like that. But this girl was at a Comic Con. She had written, drawn, colored, produced this entire comic book herself, and was selling the, at her own booth at Baltimore Comic Con. This girl was 15. I was blown away. It didn't matter if the book was good. Yeah, her art, it was really good.
Yeah.
There's room to improve. The writing, good, room to improve. That, none of
but
that
she was
mattered.
15 years
she
old.
She was 15 and she had done this. And I bought the book, hands down, right there and then. And I was walking away and I turned to my friends and was like, I have to be back here next year with my own book. Because I've been saying it for years. Like, oh, I'm going to finally do it. You know, I'll get off my ass and finally make a comic book. Because, like, when I was walking away from that table, I told myself, no, this is it. I have to be back here. I have to make my own comic book. I have to do this. Because if she can do it at 15, what the hell's my excuse? You know, why am I still sitting around on my ass feeling sorry for myself and, like, you know, daydreaming about these stories when I can actually be doing something about it? So, yeah, that 2 years ago was the ultimate catalyst to really push forward and get this going.
And being at a major event like Baltimore, even Wizard World, if you're able to get to it, you see a lot of even young, you said 15, young artists that are as good as a lot of the professionals.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember being at a Wizard World 1 year, and where Marvel was still going to a lot of the major shows, and this kid brought in a sketchbook to have his favorite artists to sign and hopefully get some artwork of his favorite artists as well. And as the person was flipping through it, he noticed this was one of the mainstream artists that was there. I think I forgot who his name. Mm-hmm. He pointed to one of the sketches. He said, "Who did this sketch?" Just out of curiosity. The kid just pointed and sounded like me. We're talking about a kid maybe 10 years old.
Damn.
And the guy said, "Listen, what I want you to do is they're evaluating artwork on the other side of this booth. You go over there, you show them this, and you tell them I sent you." And, you know, it's like, because, you know, it's like, he wasn't knocking.
Right.
Anything. It's like, I want you to, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're good, you know. And yet you have the kids that are, you know, see, there's that tale that came out that was published in Wizard when they were, way before they decided to make a comeback with their magazine.
Right.
That one of these fans, again, 5, 6 years old, drew the Hulk, get it signed by, you know, to offer it up as a gift to the guy who actually drew Hulk at that particular time. And he said, he thanked the kid. He said, you did this yourself? And the kid, you know, shy, again, that age group. He said, well, I can't. The story sounds like the guy was being an asshole, but he wasn't. He said, I can't take this. And the kid was like, from what the dad was trying to tell the artist, and the artist were kind of collaborating, he said the kid looked like he was going to break down and cry.
Right.
He said, no, the reason why I can't take it is because it's not signed. Now, it looked like, you know, an 8-year-old without, you know, any skill did it, because the artist provided the, you know, artwork. And he's like, yeah, it's a true story, see? But it kind of inspires the kid to do better and
right.
just to work, and that he's not, I don't want to say sucky, but it kind of inspires, you know. You
right.
have a lot of great artists and a lot of great people saying, hey, work on it, you know, come on, keep going back. Is there one of the things I've seen from independents like yourself and mainstream is that when artwork is storyline, I don't know if you came across this tip, is the aspect of going from point A to point B, if you can understand that. Meaning if the example that I heard is like, yeah, you've shown Batman before, then you show him with a brass, like kryptonite brass knuckles in a way, but you didn't show him going to his belt.
Right.
You provided A and C. You didn't provide a B.
Right.
You didn't provide something, that connectivity.
Well, those details get, you know, kind of put in by the reader, you know,
right.
kind of, because I mean, if the art is good, if the writing's solid, everything's coming together, then it will kind of play out like a moving, flowing story in your mind's eye, and your mind will connect those, you know, even if you don't necessarily see it. Now, as long as the logical gap isn't too great.
Right.
You know, you can't just, you know, can't have just Batman standing on top of a roof, and the next panel, like, the Penguin is at his feet, like, bloody
right.
and beaten. Like, that's a stretch. But yeah, you can do little things like that, and then the artist, you know.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
To each their own, and depends, again, as you said, the story. And
yeah, well, I mean, the greats of the industry know how to, you know, make it flow and make sure that you lead you, the reader, in the right direction.
And
that's why they're the greats.
Because it's about 4:30 now, that way we could all get started packing up, and me can bring this. Any advice you could give to those who might be thinking of doing their own independent work?
Okay, so everyone's going to tell you this, and it's like beating a dead horse, but it's the best possible advice that I, in my very limited experience, can give. Just fucking do it. Just do it. Create. Whatever it is you want to do, just get it done. Just do it. Do it for yourself, if for nothing else. For nobody else, just do it. It has to get done. You have a story to tell. You have something to draw. You have to get it out of you. Just do it. That's the best piece of advice I can give. I hear too many people talking about, oh, one day, and I was one of them. And in some ways, I'm still one of them for a lot of my projects. But it's all just about, you just got to get off your ass and do it. And, you know, success follows hard work, and luck follows hard work, you know, and luck, you know, hard work leads to luck, and luck can lead to hard work and everything. But just do it. That's the best piece of advice I can give.
And thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
See you hopefully around in the other shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and I wish you the best.
Thank you very much. If you guys are interested, you can find me on Twitter at Kyle Reyes, or you can find me on Facebook, same thing. I'm the only Kyle Reyes in the United States, so it's pretty easy to find. And if you
Kyle
want my identity, I have student
Kyle
loan.
Kyle
Reyes.
Rice.
It's Greek. Pronounce
okay.
it any way you like.
All right.
All right. Thanks a bunch.
No problem. And that's, folks, out at an hour and 55 minutes. We are out of here. Thank you for participating in this lovely experiment of a live episode. Hopefully you enjoyed every little bit, all the interviews, the surprise guests, and everything else. We're going to convert this episode. It's, as always, like all our episodes, they're available on Podbean as thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. You can always email us for your questions, comments, and smart remarks to longcoatmafia@gmail.com. We're, as always, found on iTunes/Apple Podcasts, depending on if you're using iTunes on your desktop or a mobile device. Speaking of mobile devices, we're also available on Google Play Music. So you can always catch us there, and plus the many other podcasting catching apps that are out there. We do have a Instagram and Twitter. Both are under Longcoat Mafia, so feel free to stalk us there. And as well, we do have a Facebook page. It is facebook.com/TheLongcoatMafiaPodcast. So see you guys next week, and enjoy. We are out of here.
See you next time on the Longcoat Mafia.